loves this music. He's one of the greatest snooker players of the modern era, known as the Rocket, due to his blistering playing style. I could use that name for some people in here, Ronnie. Essex boy Ronnie O'Sullivan has been playing snooker for many years now. One of the biggest names, winning numerous world championships. His personal life hasn't been quite as rosy, and he is in Belfast at the minute for the Northern Irish Open. And he's set to release his first novel this Friday. So, bit of a writer, Ronnie?
Well, I mean, I've done two autobiographies before, and I was heavily involved in the process, which I enjoyed immensely. Orion recognised that and see how much I put into that, and they said, well, would you like to do any more books? I said, well, you know, what are you talking? And they said, well, novels. And I was like, oh, okay, how does that work? So once we got round the table and spoke about it, then, you know, the idea seemed possible.
This is fiction, but it's described as heavily influenced by your own life experiences.
Well, obviously, you know, the whole idea behind it was that, you know, in the autobiographies I could allude to certain stuff, whereas in this book I've been able to play about with it a bit. So
is this book almost more honest? Because you can say stuff and technically it's fiction, but, you know, there's maybe more detail.
Yeah, at the time of writing autobiographies, obviously my dad was still away, and, you know, you had to be sensitive to certain names and people and what, you know, the life that I was kind of leading sometimes, whereas in this book, Frankie James is actually giving people a real insight into actually what was going on for me as well. You know, I was trying to be a snooker player, but then there's the other side where I was trying to do stuff for my family, my father, and bits and pieces. And you know, and it was the kind of lifestyle I didn't really want to do, but you kind of have to do it for your family sometimes.
Yeah, you say your dad was away, your dad was in prison.
Yeah.
That must be difficult to try, especially when you're in the spotlight, because celebrities, I'm not sure if you like that phrase, they come under a lot of scrutiny and criticism. And when that spotlight is shining on you and you're trying to deal with these different elements of your life that people maybe would assume are not there.
Yeah, I found it difficult in the beginning, but then I kind of got my head around it. That I thought, you know, I've just got to get through this. I mean, don't believe everything you read. I knew a lot of it was untrue, but I just kind of had to get my head down, try and be as successful as I could on the table, be there for my mum, be there for my dad, and basically just try and keep the family together as a unit, and that was all it was. So it was kind of me and my family against kind of everything else, if you like, in a way, and that's what kind of got me through. You know, to try and stay determined. I had my problems along the way, but, you know, I think everybody else does, and it's just finding a way out of that sometimes.
The main character, Frankie, apparently there are some links to you in terms of what you've been through and your personality. He has to deal with criminal gangs and problems with addiction. Now, you've kind of alluded to some of this already, but how close is this character to you and your life growing up?
Yeah, very, very much so. Probably a lot. I mean, the relationship I have with my father is a very close one. Relationship with my sister, although I don't have a sister, I have a brother, still similar kind of relationship. You're there to care for them, make sure that, you know, that they're all right. And also the kind of life that Frankie led from when the book started is kind of how it was for me when my dad went away when I was 17. I was thrust into trying to have to deal with stuff that he was dealing with and put into the world that he was involved
because
in.
Because he was, you can instead of me putting words in your mouth, what kind of work was he in?
Well, he had adult bookshops, sex shops in the West End. And, you know, I grew up all around that when I was growing up as a young kid.
And was that just normality to you? Because a lot of people will hear that and think, oh, that's an unusual... You know, my dad, when I was growing up, was a butcher and an electrician, you know, and worked in a pub, ran a pub for a while. It's quite different.
It was totally normal for me. But, you know, ever since I was born, my dad had been in that industry. And, you know, it was kind of against the law, but the right side of against the law, if you like. You know, if you was going to get put away, it was only 6 months. Whereas for
the right side of against the law, what does that mean?
Well, if you get done for murder, you get 20 years. You get done for drugs, you get 10 years. And my dad, you know, he knew that the worst that could happen to him was maybe 6 months in an open prison, but the rewards were that good that he just thought, you know what? You know, my personality suits that I can run these kind of empire in the area of Soho, which was kind of like you had to kind of stamp your authority a bit down there in a way because there were people ready to try and take over your business in many ways.
I want to ask what he was put in prison for.
Murder.
How long was he in prison?
He done 19 years and 4 months, which was an awful long time.
That's a long time. 19 years.
And 4 months, yeah.
What kind of relationship do you have with him now?
I have a really good relationship with him now. I mean, I've always had a great relationship with my dad, even when I was visiting him.
What he was put away for, did that impact that relationship in a negative way? I know that sounds like a really obvious question, but you seem to still be very close to him. And some people might say, well, look, if my someone really close to me did something like that or was put away for that, it maybe would impact how I felt about them.
Yeah, I think if I thought my dad was generally a nasty bit of work, then I think, you know what, he had it coming to him. But I just think he was kind of easily led around the wrong people. He's got a heart of gold deep down, so I know he's a good person. And I just think, you know, I just felt sorry for him, really, that he'd kind of got himself in trouble and this was his life for 20 years. So, and he'd give me the shirt off his back if he could, you know. And so I just felt that sense of loyalty there to kind of stay close, be strong. You know, I missed him, I loved him, and that will never change. My relationship with him there is obviously very different. I was 16 when he went away. I was 36 when he came out. I'm my own person, and I've learned that I have to stay my own person. So my dad's smart enough to realise that, and we've kind of, established the boundaries of where we are with stuff.
Yeah.
And we have a great relationship now.
And how do you process when you're told that someone that's so important in your life, your parent, you know, this the key member of your life, the family, is going to be away for so long? Because that must be really, it's almost like a death. Maybe not an appropriate phrase to use, but
yeah.
Knowing that person's not going to be, you know, just go down the road and see them or be in the house all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that was the worst part for me, was when he went away. And I just qualified for the World Championships the day before. I was only 16, and I got a phone call saying obviously he was guilty, and he got 18 years, and that just done my head in. I remember screaming and crying and running down the street, and then I spoke to his barrister a little bit later on in the day, and I said, well, what does it actually mean, 18 years? She went, well, actually, he's got to do 18 years before he even thinks about coming out. And that's when it hit me, and I was like, is there no way he can get out earlier? And she was like, nah. And that's when I thought, I'm going to be 36 when he comes out. And that's when it hit me, and I just kind of just, and I woke up the next morning, the house was quiet, it was dead, and I just thought, oh, you know, I just didn't want to live, to be honest. I thought, how can I not have my dad around me? He's been like my main stability ever since I was 7 or 8, you know. So it was massively hard for me, massively hard.
On the programme this morning, we have been focusing on mental health and the different issues around that. You've had your own battles.
Yeah.
Were they linked to what was happening in your life?
It's very difficult to say this happened. I am how I am because of certain circumstances that happened in my life. I get that, you know, there are circumstances that can affect you, but I've just kind of just thought, well, it is what it is. I have to deal with it. What's the best way of dealing with it? And, you know, I've tried lots and lots of things. The best thing for me now is just to try and keep a simple life. I go running virtually every day. I find that that's the best antidepressant pill on the market. It takes a lot of effort, but, you know, I try and keep contact with a lot of, you know, I was out this morning at 6:45 running with one of the best runners the island's got.
Where did you run?
We run, I don't know where we run. He just took me on the route. We done 5 miles, and, you know, we done
this
it.
This is around Belfast?
Yeah, we done it in 35 minutes, and he's, you know, and I've never met him before, but he's a lovely guy, and we have a common interest, is that we like to run, and we just talk about running. We're quite boring, really. You know, they call us running bores, but, you know, once you get into it, there's no feeling like it.
You're less controversial than the cyclists. Well, here in Northern Ireland anyway, people get a little bit riled up sometimes about them. You mentioned earlier, Ronnie, about keeping a simple life, trying to keep your head right, but having the career, the life that you have, that must be quite difficult. I mean, you're flying here and there, you're competing in major competitions. There is that, you know, what I keep referring to, this celebrity interest, you know. So to keep things very simple must be a bit of a challenge.
Sometimes it can be, but you have to just kind of accept that that's part of the process, and you kind of have to set your own rules, really. And there's certain things that you'll accept from the public, and certain things you just don't, you know. And
like what?
I'm fine with signing autographs, but I just won't do pictures on mobile phones. Everyone's got a mobile phone. No one knows how to work them. You're standing there like a complete idiot.
But thinking, do you get criticised? Do people then look at you and think, well, that's that, you know, who is he to say no to a selfie?
Well, exactly. I mean, a lot of people can have that attitude, but I just think it really does get on my nerves. So I think, why should I you know, participate in something I'm not really happy about doing. You know, I'm not a big fan of social media. I'm not a big fan of Facebook and all this sort of stuff. So that's all they're going to do with their pictures. And I'm really sorry to disappoint them, but, you know, I'm happy to give an autograph. But, you know, sometimes you just want to keep, you know, your time's quite precious.
Yeah, well, you've been warned now, so if you do spot Ronnie around Belfast, do not ask for a selfie, but ask for an autograph. I guess people, it's going back to this simple life thing. When you go home then in the evening, what does Ronnie do to just relax and to, you know, people maybe assume, you know, we see pictures of Kim Kardashian and the likes and they have these extravagant lifestyles.
Mm.
You know, do you live in a big mansion? Do you go home and take a dip in one of your hot tubs? You know, or do you go and make a cup of tea and watch Coronation Street?
No, I like cooking. I'm well into cooking. I probably go... Sometimes I train twice a day, so I run in the morning and I go to the gym in the evening. I practice my snooker sometimes in the evening. I don't really have a lot of free time, but whatever time I do have, I try to do things that I'm passionate about and I enjoy. So my whole life is really good fun. I try not do things that I don't want to do.
Selfies
now and again with young kids and people that are generally want one. But if someone just comes up to me, I'm like, look, mate, you know. Not today.
Let's talk about snooker. Obviously, it's what you do. My dad is a massive fan of yours and snooker. Not that I'm not. That sounded a bit odd. But when you watch those matches and the silence and the concentration, I often wonder how you keep your cool, how any snooker player keeps their cool when they know there's so many people in that room just over their shoulder or watching at home. And everything is down to that precision move every time.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no feeling like it. You know, when you're out there in the arena and you're feeling fantastic, there's 1,000 people there, you're playing equally another top player, you know, your mind just goes into to another place. And, you know, it's although it's a game of skill, it's also a game of the mental side as well. Mm. And I think trying to, you know, be... fantastic in both of them areas is the challenge for a snooker player or any sportsman, really.
Because you've got all that you've got that waiting when you're the patience then you must have to have when you're waiting for that other person and you keep your concentration waiting on your move.
Yeah, well, you'll be in a match and you're not going to have it all your own way, and there's parts of the match where you can feel like that you might want it's, you know, it's not going to be your day and you want to give up, but you just don't. And it's matches like that that you come through that make you stronger and make you have much more belief in yourself.
You have been playing snooker for a long time. You started at quite a young age, but in terms of influences and people that you looked up to when you were just starting out?
Steve Davis was my main hero. Jimmy White, when I first started playing, but my dad quickly kind of said to me, right, if you want to be the best that there's ever been, you know, you've got to start looking to emulate Steve Davis. Jimmy White's great and he's the best entertainer snooker's ever seen. He said, but if it's about trophies and titles, then obviously Steve Davis is the role model. So he became someone that I copied, if you like, in many ways. And then Stephen Hendry come on the scene and for different reasons took the game to a higher level. And he was another one that I kind of looked at and thought, right, well, you know, I need to try and become better than Stephen Hendry and, you know, watch what he's doing and learn from him. So... you know, they were my snooker heroes, but outside of snooker, you know, people like Usain Bolt, I just love him. I just think he's an amazing athlete, amazing character, and he's under extreme pressure every time he goes out there, but he just looks like he's having fun.
Doesn't he? That irritates me.
Well, I just think that's just the perfect secret, you know, to be that good at something and that, you know, and everyone expects him to win every race he does, but he just does it in such a way that... You just want to be him, you know. He's just a legend, isn't he?
You mentioned earlier about your dad saying, "Look, if you want to be the best, is that something that you focused on from a young age?"
Mm.
Because obviously, a lot of competition. There's a lot of people that want to do what you do, and there's pressure there trying to be on top of your game.
I work with Steve Peters and he's one of the best there is. Well, he's the best that I've ever worked with, and I tell him stuff and he says, you know, I tell him about a conversation I had with my dad when I was about 9 or 10, and my dad sat me down and he said, do you want to be the best player in the world? I said, I'd love to. Right, so if you want to be the best, you need to do this, this, this and that. And I was like, really? You know, and it was quite... quite, you know, relentless, you know, for a 10-year-old. Most 10-year-olds are out on their bike, having fun, riding around on their BMX.
And what did he tell you to do? Or went, is that a secret? That
No, it's not a secret. He went, you've got to keep fit. He said, you've got to run maybe 2-3 miles a day. He said, you've got to be in bed early at 9 o'clock. You've got to do your 4 or 5 hour practice every day. You can't have no girlfriends. You can't have no friends. You can't be out on your bike.
It's a lot of dedication. There's a lot of, I guess, sacrifice then.
Yeah, it was absolute sacrifice. And at the time, I was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know, because that's all I ever wanted to do. But when I look back, I think, you know, sometimes it would have probably been better to have maybe just let it happen rather than trying to make it happen.
Would it have happened?
I don't know. And I like to think that there was a chance it could have happened. But I think with my dad's approach, it was more like more chance of it happening. You know, was it the right decision? I don't know. You know, you don't know what path I could have taken, you know, could have been successful at something else, but without that kind of intenseness. So,
but you must have a certain personality then that you can focus on something like that. You can be so dedicated because it takes a lot of commitment, and many of us maybe wouldn't have that. We wouldn't stick at something, and we would come up with excuses as to why we were not a world champ many times over.
Mm. Well, again, I mean, that was probably my biggest drawback, was that I needed someone to push me and crack the whip. Whenever my dad wasn't there, I wouldn't go running, I wouldn't practice, I would be lazy, I would go out and play football, I'd go out and play tennis. I didn't really relish being on the snooker table, but it was only when my results were poor that my dad would go, well, why do you think you lost? And I said, well, I don't know. He went, you haven't been doing your running this week. You haven't been practicing, you've been out doing this. And I'd be like, oh. And it was kind of like, he'd give me that look as if to say, like, you know, he wasn't happy. So it was kind of like forced on me, if you like, to kind of look at my behaviour.
So it was forced on you to be a multiple world champion?
Well, it's forced on me to kind of put the time and the effort in when I didn't really want to do it. You know, the upshot of it is that I've managed to win, you know, 5 world titles. I've had an amazing career, so I have to say
he says that and he shrugs his shoulders as if to say, just 5 so far, you know, it's just what it is. But you must feel a really quite heightened sense of achievement. You must be proud of yourself.
Well, I don't know, you know, there's Stephen Hendry's got 7, Steve Davis has got 6, so there's still more to do, if you like. And I feel like that I'm probably, you know, I believe that I'm better than anyone else that's played the game. So
you do?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So you have the confidence there?
I wouldn't say I have the confidence.
You just think you're the best.
Well, I mean, I'm not the most confident person, but when you put me on the table, I then start to believe that I can do it. But off the table, I have so many doubts, just like everybody else does.
Do you ever feel like the dedication, and, you know, partly due to your dad and the influence he had, maybe led towards you that slightly addictive personality where you want to be the best, you've already alluded to, you want more of these world championships under your belt. You think, is that part of you, who you are?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a very addictive nature. Once I sort of get my teeth into something, I take it to as far as I can possibly go, even with the running, with cooking, with anything I do, I want to be the best at. You know, and I don't want to be necessarily be better than my opponent. I just want to be the best I can be. And I think that's a good trait in many ways.
The reason I ask is to try and lead on to the next question in terms of addiction, because you've had your own problems away from snooker. How did that creep into your life?
I think it was just a phase that I was going through. Obviously, my mum and dad was away, and, you know, again, through my upbringing, my mum and dad seemed to be partying quite a lot. But that was okay for him because he ran a business and he had other people doing his work for him. As a sportsman, yeah, I kind of couldn't get away with it. But in my mind, I thought success meant that you was meant to go out and party and socialise and do things like that. And before I knew it, it kind of all got a bit out of hand, and trying to stop it then was difficult because I kind of dug myself in a hole.
And what are we talking about here? Are we talking about alcohol? Are we talking about
alcohol,
drugs?
Alcohol, cannabis. Cannabis was a big favourite of mine because it was a bit of a relaxer, because I was never one for really going out. But then I got the munchies and I put on 4 or 5 stone, and, you know, I just thought, well, you know, I look in the mirror or see a picture of myself, I was like, wow, you know, is that really what I look like, you know? And you'd hear people say certain comments and you think, they're talking about me there, you know? And you kind of start to think, you know, I need to sort this out. And that was, you know, when I made that call to the drugs helpline and got myself in the Priory and started looking at my addictions and understanding what addiction was about.
Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time left. I could have talked to you for like half an hour, Ronnie, but I wanted to ask you something completely different. You've talked about your own dad and the influence he had on your life. You're a dad yourself.
Mm.
What's that like? How would you describe yourself as a dad?
Just unconditional love, really. You know, I've tried to not, you know, my children, my son likes football. My daughter, she loves horse riding. She wants to do really good at school. My son's not bothered about doing good at school. And I just try to sort of say to him, look, you know, just be happy, do your best, you know, just be the best you can be, you know.
So you don't push them in the same way your dad pushed you?
No, I wouldn't want to do that to them. I just want them to be, I want them to have a good education. I want them to become their own people and then eventually, you know, them to decide what they want to do.
Okay, Ronnie O'Sullivan, the book is called Framed. Is it out now or when is it out?
The book's out on Thursday.
Thursday. Yeah. So you can go and get that. We'll be back after your news at 10 o'clock. I'm just going to get a quick selfie here with Ronnie. and remember, if you see him out and about in Belfast, autographs only. Ronnie, thank you very much.
Lovely, cheers, thank you.